Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Showdown. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Joel David Santner, Christopher Graybill, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Kimberly Gilbert, Gary Tells, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Drew Copas, Alyssa Wilmoth, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Bobby Aselford, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, Johann Detweiler, Patrick Bussink, and Mort Shelby. Texas Showdown, Part 1, Pecos Crossing. In the 1890s, a mile was a distance that a man could respect. From Sonora, Texas, up to San Angelo, and from there west to the Pecos River was a long, rough, dangerous trail. Especially when a man paused every so often and turned in the saddle to look back with worried eyes for someone who might be following. A lot of Texas maps didn't even show Sonora, for scarcely more than a decade had passed since it first began as a trading post on the San Antonio-El Paso Road. Much of it was fresh and new, the unpainted lumber not yet blistered and darkened in the sun. But to Johnny Fristo and Speck Quitman, riding in after spending the winter in a cow camp far down on the Devil's River, it wouldn't have mattered if Sonora had been 100 years old. It was there, and so were they. A long winter had bowed out to spring, and this was going to be payday. Speck was as eager as a new-weaned pup loosed on a fresh scent.
She's a peach of a town, ain't she, Johnny? Didn't seem this pretty when we left here last fall.
No town looks like much when you're riding out of it with your pockets empty.
They had had a run of luck last fall, both good and bad. They had worked all summer with a wagon crew gathering cattle from the Rocky Hills and the live oak thickets of the broad Edwards Plateau. After fall branding, the boss paid them off. They drifted into Sonora hoping to find something else. They hadn't found work. But the chuckle-headed Speck had found a man who was willing to teach him about poker. The lessons came high. By the time Johnny Fristo found out Speck had lost all their money, the teacher had vanished, bound for San Angelo and points north. The cowboys would have spent the winter swamping out saloons and sleeping on a porch if a hawk-faced cow trader named Larimore hadn't shown up. Larimore was looking for somebody to work cheap and take care of a steer herd he planned to winter down on the river. He was paying pasturage to old man Hoskins, who had more grass than he was using. Johnny and Speck spent the winter in a picket shack that was really half dugout, pitifully short of coffee and tobacco, but a healthy distance from all temptation. Today they came to Sonora by way of the Del Rio Road. Eastward, halfway up a hill, stood the new Sutton County Courthouse. Horses lazed at hitching racks and posts along the sloping, dusty street. Speck eyed the first saloon, but rode on by it.
I heard a feller say once to always pass up the first one. Shows you got willpower.
Speck, if it's all of a whatness to you, I'd rather clean up first.
Speck reined in at the square frame front of the second saloon, stepped down and wrapped his reins through a ring in the hitching post.
You wash the outside, and I wash the inside.
They had a little money, not much. Larimore had advanced them a few dollars last fall. He owed them for a winter's work, so they would have plenty when they found him. Johnny had counted his money several times before leaving the cow camp, and now he counted it again. Main thing he wanted to begin with was a change of clothes. Those he wore had spent a hard winter, washed periodically in the river, beaten with a rock, and slept on to press some of the wrinkles out. After a while, with new-bought clothes bundled under his arm, he walked into a barber shop.
Howdy. Take a seat. I'll be right with you.
The barber, who was in the middle of giving a shave, was as talkative as Speck Quitman.
Well now, folks say you bought a ranch up on the Colorado River, Milam.
The man called Milam knew better than to answer while the barber was scraping whiskers from his neck.
Oh yes, I was up in that Colorado City country once. Sand country it is. Good for cows. And no stumbling around over rocks all the time.
Any country is good, Jess, when you own a piece of it yourself.
I used to think that way myself till I lost my little place in the big panic. Found out it's easier to scrape chins than to try and scrape a living off a piece of hardscrabble land. Oh, but then I reckon you wouldn't buy anything but a good place, Milam. I bet you and Miss Cora are going to be real happy.
We will. She'll be mighty pleased with the place the way I've got it fixed up for her.
Oh, when you taking her?
We're leaving tomorrow morning. Taking the Sonora Mail to San Angelo.
The barber finished. As the customer stood up, Johnny saw that the tall man was around 40, maybe a little more. The outdoors had weathered him badly. His hair showed streaks of gray, but his mustache was still coal black. He glanced at Johnny.
Howdy.
Johnny stood as the man put on his hat and coat, paid the barber, and left.
Now, what can I do for you? Shave, haircut?
Both. And then a long, slow bath. Who's that?
Oh, him? Why, a friend, I thought everybody knew Milam Haggard.
Name sounds kind of familiar.
Oh, he was a Texas Ranger down on the Rio Grande. Married Miss Cora Hayes here, and she talked him into taking off the star. He's been up in the country buying them a place to live.
This Haggard, he's got a name for being a bulldog in a fight, hasn't he?
Oh, a man couldn't have a better friend than Milam Haggard. Or a worse enemy. There's no end to what he'll do for a man he thinks is in the right. He's been known to ride 50 miles in the rain to fetch medicine for a sick Mexican kid. But break the law, and you got trouble. Oh, he hates an outlaw, Milam does. He sticks to a trail, too. I don't suppose he ever let a man get away once he got onto the scent. But one time, he trailed a pair of horse thieves plumb down into Mexico, came back leading their horses. Their gun belts was looped around the saddle horns, and the saddles was empty. Milam never did talk about them hunts. Oh, but he didn't have to. Yes, sir. Miss Cora, she made him turn in his badge and put up his guns. She was afraid somebody someday would be bringing his saddle in empty. Now, let's see about that shave.
After his shave and a long soak in the barber's tub, Johnny took his and Speck's horses over to the wagon yard. He reckoned he might as well turn the horses loose in the stableman's corral and give them some feed. They weren't going anywhere today.
All right if we bend down over here tonight, me and my partner. We won't bother nothing.
Yeah, help yourself. Just don't be doing no smoking around that hay. I'd hate to sell your burned down barn. You couldn't pay for it no way.
Johnny had let Speck have $3 this morning. He figured that wasn't enough to get him drunk or into a poker game. Entering the saloon, he found out how wrong he was. Speck pushed away from a gaming table and threw his hands up in a gesture of defeat.
That cleans me. Hey, partner! Come here and give me enough for a fresh start. I was just about to clean these fellers' plows.
Looks to me like it's your plow that's shining.
Aw, Johnny.
One of the gamblers looked over to the bartender.
Relax! Give these cowboys a drink! I'm paying for it with their own money.
Speck and Johnny leaned work-flattened bellies against the short bar. Speck lifted his glass.
Here's to us.
A man appeared in the saloon's open door. He started to walk in and stopped abruptly, seeing Johnny and Speck. Quickly, he backed out and walked off up the street.
Speck, that was Larimore.
Maybe he didn't see us.
He saw us. He backed out like somebody had shot at him. I don't like the smell of it.
You don't think he would? Oh, you know, he just might.
Let's go find out.
Larimore was walking briskly away.
Hey, Mr. Larimore, wait!
The cow trader appeared not to hear. Johnny and Speck broke into a long trot and caught up with him in front of the general store.
Mr. Larimore, just a minute.
Ah, by George, it's Speck and Johnny. Wasn't expecting y'all till Friday.
Old man Hoskins told us to come on in. So we're here, Mr. Larimore, and we sure do need our money.
Money? What money?
We put in 6 months of work for you, Larimore. You promised us $20 a month. Now we want to get paid.
Johnny was hardly aware of footsteps on the plank walk behind him, or of a man with a badge who passed them and started into the general store.
I've already paid you. I paid both of you at the ranch. What do you mean now, trying to browbeat me into paying you again?
The man in the doorway stopped and turned, his attention caught.
You're a liar! All you ever gave us was a few dollars advance last fall. Now, damn you, pay up!
Speck grabbed him roughly by the collar.
Get your hands off of me, you halfwit! I won't stand for being robbed!
You're the one who's a thief, Larimore!
The sheriff had heard enough. He stepped up and placed a big hand firmly over Speck's fist, his eyes stern.
Turn him loose, cowboy.
Speck turned angrily upon the intruder, but his mouth shut as he saw the badge.
Sheriff, it's a good thing you came by. These boys are trying to pull a fast shuffle on me.
All right, everybody simmer down a little. Tell me what the trouble is.
Well, I hired these two last fall to watch over some cattle I was wintering down on the Devil's River. The other day I picked up the cattle and paid these men. Now they're trying to claim they still got wages coming. It's not my fault if they've drunk it up or lost it playing poker.
He's a liar, Sheriff. Y'all have been drinking. I can smell it. Just one is all I've had. It was bought for me. We're not lying to you, Sheriff. He is.
Seems to me I remember you boys. You was in town last fall.
Sure.
You lost your wad down yonder trying to beat one of them Angelo gamblers. You was dead broke.
That's right, Sheriff. I gave him a job. Do a man a favor and he'll spit on you every time.
He hasn't paid us.
If you haven't been paid, where'd those duds come from?
Old man Hoskins knows. Why don't you ask him?
Eli Hoskins? Sure, his word is good as his bond, but it's a long ways out there.
If you're interested in the truth, you'll go ask him.
Aw, they're just stalling, Sheriff. They're caught in a lie. They belong in jail.
Speck Quitman exploded. His fist came up and caught Larimore full in the face.
That done it. I was halfway inclined to go along with you boys, but now I'm gonna let you sweat a while in the jailhouse.
Sheriff, Speck's hot-headed and what he did wasn't smart. But it don't change the fact that Larimore's lying. Give us a chance. Go talk to old man Hoskins.
I don't know what I'm wasting my time for, but I'll do it. I'll send a man out to talk to old Eli. Till then, you boys are going to enjoy Sutton County's hospitality behind bars. Mr. Larimore, I'm expecting you to stay in town till I get the straight of this.
Sure, Sheriff. Anything you say.
The sheriff took hold of Johnny's and Speck's arms.
Come on.
They walked up the street, the sheriff holding them tightly. The Sonora Mail was leaving for San Angelo. Johnny opened his eyes and glanced up at the barred window. It was sunrise. He arose stiffly from the hard cot and stretched his back to try to work the ache out of it. Johnny's movements awakened Speck Quitman, who peered dourly at him a moment, then swung his sock feet down to the floor and started probing around sleepy-eyed trying to find his boots. A limping man entered the jail's front door carrying a covered platter.
You boys up? Brought y'all some breakfast.
He dragged in a small table. He did it carelessly, as if not even considering that the two prisoners could easily jump him and get away. He'd brought a big mess of scrambled eggs with pieces of fried beef alongside and some biscuits.
Hope you fellas don't mind eating off the platter. Too far to pack extra dishes.
Leaving the cell door wide open, he went to the stove and picked up the coffee pot.
Now, don't you boys go getting the wrong idea. We don't treat all our prisoners as good, but I figure y'all been out in the cow camp all winter and ain't had no eggs. Besides, like I was telling the sheriff, it's probably that Larimore who ought to be in here instead of you two.
Johnny and Speck went after their eggs like a pair of starved wolves. The talkative jailer sipped the scalding black coffee, his lips immune to the burn.
I used to cowboy, too, till it got stove up. I looked you two over and decided you was all right. Besides, I heard about some cow deals Larimore was mixed up in. He's no deacon in the church.
Hear anything yet from old man Hoskins?
Nope. Thought he might be in the crowd that was down a while ago to see Milam and Cora Haggard off on the Sonora Mail, but he wasn't. My, she sure did look handsome. Folks was afraid she would wait around here and be an old maid. But I guess she was just waiting for the right man. And she got him. You know about Milam Haggard?
Some.
Mucho hombre, that Milam. Sure did hate to see him turn in his badge. But I expect most of the devilment is over anyway. Country's turned respectable. Milam has outlived his time as a lawman. We don't need his kind of lawn anymore. This is the 90s now. And we're about as modern as we can ever get.
Eventually the sheriff came in, his face creasing as he saw the open cell door.
Ed, this is a jailhouse, not a hotel. One of these days somebody's gonna walk out right over you.
Well, I wouldn't do it for just anybody, but these boys are all right. Like I was telling you last night.
I remember what you told me, and it turns out you were right. Boys, you can go.
So you heard from old man Hoskins?
Didn't have to. I just found out Larimore sneaked off to the edge of town a while ago and caught the stage hack for San Angelo. If he'd have been on the square, he'd have stayed here like I told him.
Damn him! He's trying to get off and keep from paying us what we got coming.
He'll pay. If you boys will get saddled up and put them ponies through their paces, you can get to Angelo ahead of the hack. Go see the sheriff there. I'll write you a letter to give him. He'll see that Larimore pays what he owes you, or he'll shove him way back in jail and forget where the key is at.
Speck and Johnny waited impatiently while the lawman scribbled a note.
I go myself, only I just got word of some trouble down in the south end of the county. It's liable to lead to a shooting if I don't stop it.
How am I going to explain to my Aunt Prue about spending the night in jail? All for nothing.
Oh, well, look at the bright side. You had supper, breakfast, and a bed, and it didn't cost you a cent.
Some bed. I slept on rocks that was softer.
We don't advertise for repeat business.
Johnny folded the letter the sheriff had given him and stuck it in his pocket.
One thing sure, we don't intend to come back.
The sheriff followed them down to the wagon yard and watched while they saddled their horses.
Stop in at Pete Smith's ranch halfway to Angelo and tell him I said to lend you a pair of fresh horses. And one more thing, don't try to do nothing on your own. Just go around that hack and get to Angelo ahead of it. Let the Tom Green County Sheriff take care of Larimore his own way. That's his job. Y'all leave Larimore alone.
He owes us more than wages now, Sheriff. He owes us for a night in jail.
Don't y'all do anything. You hear me?
Along the trail on the way to Angelo, Johnny and Speck came upon a band of sheep scattered to graze on an open flat where the grass was shorter and more to their liking. Fat young lambs lifted their heads to watch the riders passing. A Mexican herder stood up at the cowboy's approach and nodded a silent greeting, his eyes narrowed in distrust.
How long since a mail hack passed this way?
Quién sabe? A while. I have no watch, senor.
What the heck? That ain't what we asked.
Let it go, Speck. It's all the answer we'll get. We're making some gain, and we'll catch up.
They moved on, putting the horses into an easy lope and holding them in it as long as they dared. They came out atop the divide in a wind-rippled sea of short green grass. Speck reined up and stood in his stirrups, peering out through a scattering of live oak trees which were shedding their old leaves and putting on a new set.
Johnny, I think I see the hack up yonder ahead of us.
Johnny squinted. It took him a minute, but he finally saw it too. Speck turned in his saddle and untied his war bag. He dug around in it and pulled out a six-shooter wrapped in oilskin. It was old and tarnished, and on one side a knife-whittled piece of mesquite wood had replaced the original grip. Relic though it was, Speck prized it above anything else he owned.
Speck, you got no use for that thing. The sheriff told us to go to the law in Angelo, not to try handling Larimore ourselves.
It wasn't the sheriff he cheated. It wasn't the sheriff that had to spend the night in Sonora jail like some drunk sheep herder.
Speck, you better put that thing back into your war bag before you do something you wish you hadn't. What if you was to accidentally shoot him? A dead man don't pay no wages.
I'm not fixing to shoot him, but I sure do intend to scare him to death.
Speck, listen to me. The sheriff made sense. This is the kind of thing they got sheriffs for.
A man ought to stomp his own snakes. And Larimore is a snake.
We can make a little welter around them and get to Angelo first. Larimore won't have any idea we're around. We can spring the sheriff on him as a surprise.
Johnny knew the only way he could stop Speck now would be with a club. All Johnny could do was stay close and try to keep things from getting too badly out of hand. Ahead of them, the trail took a bend around a big mott of live oak trees to avoid a wheel-breaking gully. Speck cut across, Johnny close behind him.
They loped around the heavy mod and came back into the trail just ahead of the stage hack. Speck slid his horse to a stop. He raised the pistol to signal the driver to halt.
What do you two peckerwoods want? We got nothing on board here worth stealing.
Don't fret yourself, mister. We didn't stop you to steal anything.
Well, then put that cannon away before you scare the lady.
For God's sake, Speck, put that damned old smoke belcher down. We're fixing to get ourselves into a mess of trouble.
Under the rolled-up side canvas, he could see the frightened face of Cora Haggard, her hands tightly clutching Milam Haggard's arm. Haggard stared at the cowboys, his gray eyes challenging and unafraid. But he was helpless, for he wore no gun. In the seat behind the Haggards, the trader Larimore was trying to crouch down out of sight. The driver looked at them with hard eyes.
If you didn't come to steal nothing, put that gun back where it belongs. Somebody might get hurt. Besides, you're stopping the U.S. mail, and that could get you sent to the pen.
Mister, we don't mean to hurt anybody, and we're sure not fixing to tamper with the mail. But you got a passenger who left Sonora owing us money, and we want it.
Cowboy, your private feuds ain't any concern of the Sonora mail. The man is a passenger. You take up your complaints with the law.
We brought our own law. Larimore, you get yourself down from there and be right spry about it.
Larimore stood up part way, his head touching the canvas.
They're lying. They came to rob me.
You heard what the driver said, boys. I don't know anything about the merit of your claim on this man, but I do know that the way you're doing this constitutes robbery in the eyes of the law. I suggest you stand back and let this hack go on.
Mr. Haggard, there's already been a robbery, and it was us that got robbed.
I remember you. The Sonora sheriff had you in tow yesterday. That doesn't make your argument sound very good to me.
I got a letter here that shows...
Forget the letter. We're taking Larimore off this stage and getting our money.
There's a woman in this hack. You put that gun away.
Haggard's severe voice got through to Speck where Johnny's pleading hadn't. Speck was a little afraid of the man. He lowered the barrel, but he rode around closer to Larimore.
How about it, Larimore? You getting down? We're about to shoot you in the leg or something.
Face white, Larimore began climbing out.
All right, I'm coming.
Stepping to the ground, he turned to plead with Haggard and the driver.
Are you gonna let them get away with this?
Mister, I got no gun, neither is Milam.
Johnny dismounted a couple of paces from the cow trader. Speck's anger gave way to anticipation, and he stepped down from the saddle.
All right, Larimore, $100 apiece.
Well, I got the money in my bag.
Larimore turned and lifted a canvas grip out of the hack. Speck shoved the pistol into his waistband and eagerly stepped closer to look as Larimore opened the bag. The trader reached inside.
There now, I've got it.
He brought his hand out with a short-barreled Colt revolver. Johnny didn't hesitate. He jumped at the trader. The hammer fell on the empty shell he kept in the cylinder for safety. The empty shell he'd forgotten in his anxiety. But the next cartridge would be a live one. Johnny grabbed the man's wrist. Haggard started putting Cora off the hack on the other side to get her away from the fight.
You fools, be careful with that pistol. You'll kill somebody.
Larimore brought up his knee and struck Johnny a hard blow to the stomach. Larimore stepped clear and leveled the pistol. As he squeezed the trigger, Speck caught him from behind and spoiled his aim.
Cora!
Cora Haggard was sinking down. Gently, Haggard eased her to the grass. The three men who had been fighting stood stiff and silent now, stunned. They saw the spread of crimson across the woman's white blouse. The color had drained from her face. Her hand reached up and clutched at Haggard's shirt.
Milam, I love you.
Then the hand dropped away.
Cora!
Larimore's wits came back to him. He pointed at Johnny.
That one did it, Haggard. He's the one who fired the gun.
No, I didn't. He had the gun. He was shooting at me.
But he was too late. Larimore had seized the advantage. He had said it first, and Haggard believed him. Johnny could see it in the violent hatred that welled into the tall man's eyes. The hack driver jumped to the ground and stared wide-eyed at Milam Haggard, who still knelt, holding his wife.
Milam, for God's sake!
Driver, he thinks it was me that killed her. It was Larimore. Tell him, you saw it.
I saw nothing. I was too busy trying to hold that team. But you boys held us up and you was robbing a passenger. That speaks for itself. Milam, we best put her aboard and take her back to Sonora.
Milam Haggard raised his head. His gaze fell upon the pistol Larimar had tossed away. Johnny saw the intention in his eyes, and he stepped forward quickly. He grabbed up the gun just as Haggard was about to leap for it.
Mr. Haggard, Larimar lied to you. I didn't shoot her.
I'll remember you.
Please, Mr. Haggard, listen to me.
I'll take my wife home and bury her amongst her people. Then I'll come looking for you. You can stay here, or you can run. It makes me no difference. Whether it takes me a week or a year, whether I ride 20 miles or 1,000, I'll find you too.
Mr. Haggard!
And when I find you, I'll kill you.
Gently, the driver and Larimar lifted the woman's body. Haggard climbed back into the hack and took her into his arms. The driver turned to Johnny and Speck.
Was I you boys? I'd go back to Sonora and throw myself on the mercy of the court. Maybe the court will have some, because there'll be no mercy in Milam Haggard.
The driver climbed up, took the reins, turned the hack around, and started back down the trail towards Sonora. Johnny and Speck watched until the hack was gone out of sight.
It was my fault, Johnny. I ought to have listened to you. We gotta go someplace, Johnny. We gotta go quick. Let's head for Mexico. It's only 100 miles to the Rio Grande.
And what do we do when we get there? We got no friends down there. We got no money. We don't even speak the language enough to get by.
But it's Mexico. The law couldn't touch us down there.
It's not the law we gotta worry about most. It's Milam Haggard. The river won't even slow him down. He'd just to keep a-hunting us, and we'd just to keep a-running. And wherever we went, we'd be gringos. We'd stand out like the Twin Mountains.
But what can we do? If we stay here, he'll kill us.
Texas is a mighty big country. He can't search it all. There are places west of here where you could drop a whole army and never find him. Maybe in time he'll get tired of looking.
I bet he don't ever quit. He looks like the kind that'll stay on a trail to the day he dies.
Johnny's jaw set firmly.
We gotta get us a little money, Johnny. We could borrow something from my Aunt Prue in San Angelo.
We better get riding.
It occurred to Johnny then that he still held Larimar's pistol. He stared at it in loathing. He drew back his arm and hurled the pistol as hard as he could into a live oak mott. They rode by night, following the stage road that crossed the South Concho at the flood-ruined settlement of Benficlin. 3 miles farther on, they rode by the stone buildings of old Fort Concho, abandoned a few years ago by the army when the Indian problems were over. Civilians lived there now. Most of the buildings were dark, for working people had gone to bed. But across the North Concho, lamps still glowed along Chadburn and Oaks and Concho Avenue. Horses stood in heads-down, hip-shot patience at hitch racks in front of the Nimitz Hotel, the Legal Tender, and the other saloons. Johnny and Speck rested their horses at the steep south bank of the river and waited in darkness, watching. Nearby stood the Oak Street Bridge, but they had purposely shied away from it, just as they'd shied away from all travelers on the road today.
I hear a horse coming across. That wooden planket sure does make a noise at night.
We best skip the bridge anyhow. It'd land us smack on Concho Avenue amongst all the saloons.
Well, there's a shallow crossing a little ways upriver. We could use that and not run into anybody.
They moved past the deep section known as Dead Man's Hole to the shallow water. They walked the horses across. The huge Tom Green County Courthouse, with its high stone walls and its tall cupola, loomed massively in the dim moonlight. It stood back well away from the river, with most of the town lying east and south of it. Johnny had always enjoyed coming here, for San Angelo was the biggest town he'd ever seen. Seemed like there was always something to watch, from a backlot badger fight to the horse races and steer roping. Holiday-seeking cowboys rode in from 100 miles away, for this was a tolerant town that understood a man's letting off steam after months of isolation on a ranch. Long as he didn't hurt anybody and paid for what he broke, no one bothered him much. They gave him his money's worth and showed him a time.
It sure does hurt, come a-sneaking in this way, like a pair of cur dogs following all the back alleys. I always like to ride in on Concho Avenue screeching like a wild Indian and letting the whole town know I was somebody coming. I sure hated having to leave here.
It was hard living with Aunt Prue, but I always did love this town. I fished up and down these rivers. I knew every horse and burro and dog by its name. Yeah, I bet I could still show you this big old pecan tree where I climbed out of the water the time of the Ben Ficklin flood. Queen of a town, she is. A cowboy's town.
Maybe things will work out someday.
You saw Haggard's eyes. We can't never come back.
Aunt Prue lived alone in a small frame house back from Chadbourne Street. The house was dark as Johnny and Speck rode up to the rear of it. They tied their horses to the picket fence.
Careful now, and don't trip over a faucet. A new waterworks has piped water right to everybody's back step. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting it in the house.
They moved to the small back porch.
Aunt Prue!
A glow went up as a lamp was lighted. Aunt Prue opened the door cautiously and extended the lamp in front of her to light the young men's faces while she had the door ready for a quick closing. She had pulled a cotton house coat on over her nightgown. Her hair was rolled up. Sleepy-eyed, she squinted at them.
Speck!
Aunt Prue, would you please get the light out of our faces and let us come in the house? We gotta talk to you.
The graying woman stared suspiciously as she lowered the lamp and opened the door wider.
Very well, come on in. Speck, let me smell your breath. Well, you don't appear to have been drinking. What on earth are you doing out this time of night? Decent folk are all in bed.
Prue, we...
Well, there's something the matter. Speak up.
There's been a little trouble.
Trouble? I knew it. I always knew it. I knew someday you'd run too long with the wrong crowd and come dragging trouble to my door. What have you done?
Aunt Prue, we didn't go to do nothing. It wasn't our fault, really, but we've been blamed for it.
Speck, you're evading me. Now what have you done?
It was an accident. A woman got killed this morning. A man who done it, he hollered right quick that it was us, and they believed him. We're on the run, Aunt Prue. We gotta run or die.
A killing? You've gotten mixed up in a killing?
It wasn't our fault. We just got blamed for it is all.
She didn't seem to hear. She turned away from him, raising her face to look up at the ceiling, then dropping her chin.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Aunt Prue, we hoped maybe you could lend us a little money. We'll send it back as soon as we can. We wouldn't ask it of you, only we got cheated out of a whole winter's pay. That's what caused the trouble in the first place.
Money! You bring disgrace to this house, to our name, and then you have the gall to come and beg me for money?
We wouldn't ask Aunt Prue, but we're desperate. We'll pay you back, I promise.
Promise? How many times have you made promises to me, Speck, and how few times have you lived up to them? You promised you'd go to school. You promised you wouldn't consort with riffraff.
Her furious eyes cut to Johnny.
You promised you would look for respectable work, but you joined a group of common cowboys and drank whiskey and caroused and made a sinner of yourself. You have drunk and gambled and debauched yourself with those painted women down on the Concho and brought me shame. I knew this would happen someday. You were born with the mark of sin on you, and now it's the brand of Cain. When my sister came to me to have her baby and no ring on her finger, I knew the mark was on you and you would come to a bad end. But I tried. God knows how I tried. I raised you and kept you because you were my sister's baby. I gave you a home and fed you and read to you from the book and tried to teach you righteousness. But all the time I knew someday the stain of sin would show. I knew you were born to hang.
Oh, Aunt Prue.
All these years I've known this day would come. I could have thrown your mother out and been spared this shame, but I didn't do it. I was a good Christian woman.
Johnny listened with anger swelling in him. He caught Speck's arm.
Come on, Speck. Let's get out of here.
That's right, run. Get on your horse and run, but you can't escape your sin. It's been on you since the day you were born.
Johnny pushed through the door, pulling hard on Speck's arm. In the doorway, Speck paused. Head still down, he didn't look up into his aunt's face.
Aunt Prue, I'm sorry.
Go on! Get out of hair! There's been enough shame on this house already! Oh, God, what have I done to deserve this? Why do you torment me so? My groaning serves as my bread. My roaring pours forth as water. For what I feared has overtaken me. What I dreaded has come upon me.
Aim Prue.
I've done my Christian duty. Now I'm through. Go on, and may God have mercy on you.
Speck trembled like a child lost. Johnny let go of his friend's arm and took an angry step toward the woman, but he caught himself before he loosed the torrent of fury that strained within him.
My mother was a real Christian woman. She'd have cut out her tongue before she would have said those things you just did.
Come on, Speck. Speck, we'll go out and see my dad. Maybe he can help us.
In silence, they headed north, leaving San Angelo behind them. For a long time, they rode without speaking, bone weary and sensing the weariness of the horses. Johnny watched the reflection of the moon in the river. Speck slumped in the saddle, his head down, the torment so heavy on him that Johnny could feel the weight of it himself.
What are you thinking about, Johnny?
Guess I was thinking about that woman, that poor Mrs. Haggard.
I was afraid maybe you was thinking about Aunt Prue.
I forgot about her.
I wish you hadn't heard all those things she said. She's probably sorry now.
She's not sorry for anybody but herself. She never felt sorry for anybody in her life. Nobody but herself.
Aunt Prue's really a good woman. You just gotta know her is all. I reckon I've given her a lot of grief. I just wish she hadn't said what she said in front of you. That about my mother and all. I never did want you to know. I hope you don't think nothing less of me, now that you know what I am.
Doesn't make a particle of difference.
Seems like I've known about as long as I can remember. Aunt Prue, she told me 100 times how she took in my mother and helped her hide her sin. And then I was born, and my mother died. God's mercy, Aunt Prue always said. She just kept me. Sure, she rode me pretty hard, always hounding me about this and that and the other thing, warning me 3 times a day about hellfire. But she fed me and kept me in clothes. Always said she didn't want folks saying she didn't do the Christian thing by her sister's boy. You seen her with her bad side showing, Johnny, but she's all the folks I got. You had a family. Me? I just got Aunt Prue. Blood kin means a right smart to you when you have so little of it. She's my aunt, and I reckon I love her.
Never was any question about that.
And she loves me. I know she does.
Sure she does, Speck.
The horses had put in a long trip all the way from Sonora. Johnny could feel his mount about to cave in beneath him. A man could drive himself to extremes when he had a reason, but he had to consider his horse. Sometime around midnight, they halted on a sloping river bottom where ageless native pecan trees stood like silent giants, spreading a huge canopy of fresh green leaves which blacked out all the moonlight. For countless generations, the Indians had come to the Three Conchos each fall to gather nuts for winter food. Now, the faces had changed, but the routine had not. Come fall, people from San Angelo and all around would tramp up and down these riverbanks gathering pecans to eat or to sell.
We oughtn't to be stopping. No telling who's behind us or how far.
But there was no choice, not unless a man wanted to walk off and leave a dead horse. They spread their single blankets upon the mat of fallen leaves and stretched out. Somehow, Speck slept, but it was a nervous, threshing sleep. Johnny knew the things that went through Speck's restless dreams.
No! No, we didn't mean to!
Johnny reached over and shook him gently.
It was a nightmare, Speck. A nightmare's all.
Oh, Johnny, I kept seeing her. She just stood there looking at me, accusing me with her eyes, with that blood on her. All that blood.
Easy, Speck, easy. Lie down and try to sleep some more.
If I gotta go through that every time, I don't think I ever want to sleep again.
Speck got up and rummaged through his war bag. Finding the pistol that had brought on the trouble, he held it a moment, feeling it with the tips of his fingers. Then he drew back and threw it into the river. Tired, a separate ache for every long mile, Johnny felt a lift as the little Fristo Ranch headquarters came in sight along a slow bend in the brush-studded draw. Stretched out ahead were the corrals he had helped build as a boy. Johnny and Speck rode their flagging horses into the main water lot gate. Two high-headed cows with trailing calves eased warily around them, breaking into a run when they were in the clear. In front of the barn, as he pulled the saddle from his horse, Johnny could tell how badly drawn his horse was. They had put in an awful day yesterday. Without those few hours of rest along the river during the early morning, the horses might not have gotten here. Johnny dropped his saddle, front end down, and draped the sweat-soaked blanket across it to dry. He slipped the bridle off the horse's head. The horse turned away and made for the water trough. In a moment, Speck's horse followed suit. Johnny stood wearily with the bridle in his hand, the leather reins trailing on the ground, and watched the thirsty horses drink. He saw his father walking out from the small frame house, trailed at a respectful distance by a short, dark-skinned Mexican cowboy. Baker Fristo was a picture of Johnny Fristo plus 25 hard years. Grinding work had put a twist in his back, and he walked, leaning a little forward. He favored his left leg, an unwanted souvenir from a bronc of years ago. His features were the same as Johnny's, but badly abused by time and weather, the hair almost solidly gray now where it showed from beneath his old grease-stained hat. He had a 3-day stubble of beard, for his wife lay buried yonder on the hill, and there was no one around to tell him to shave.
Son! It's sure good to see you home.
Howdy, Dad. I'm tickled to be here.
Baker extended his hand to Speck.
Howdy, Speck. I declare, you fellas look a sight. Bet you've been over in Angelo celebrating spring. Don't y'all know when to stop?
Oh, Mr. Fristo, I'm afraid we ain't got nothing to celebrate about.
There's something wrong. What is it?
Dad, it's a long story. I don't hardly know where to start. Reckon we could eat first? We're both as hungry as a wolf.
Oh, sure. Me and Lalo were just fixing us some dinner when we saw y'all ride up. We'll throw some more in the skillet. You sure you ain't been drinking?
No, sir. None at all.
Well, let's mosey up to the house.
Baker led the way. Johnny and Speck trudged along, trying vainly to keep up with him. Another day, they would have led him. When he had finally become financially able, Baker Fristo had built the frame house to please his wife. Lord knew she hadn't had many of the nicer things. Once it had seemed a big and beautiful thing to Johnny. Now that he was grown, he could see it for the wooden box that it was. The color was faded and peeling, too. The house hadn't been painted since his mother passed away. Off to one side of it stood the picket shack, which Baker Fristo had first put up for his little family so many years ago. It was built of cedar posts, hewn for a fit and lashed tightly together, the butt end set solidly in a trench. The space between the posts had been chinked with plaster. In a way, it resembled a small log cabin standing on end. The Mexican, Lalo Acosta, lived in it now. Baker Fristo sliced a steak from a quarter of tarp-wrapped beef hanging on the small back porch. Johnny stood around hungrily watching the meat frying in the pan. Impatiently, he took it out of the skillet before it was completely done, as did Speck. They took the beef in big bites and ate it quickly like a pair of starved pups.
You boys are in Dutch, I can tell that.
Johnny glanced at Lalo Acosta, indicating by his expression that he didn't want to talk in front of anybody but his father.
We need a couple of fresh horses, Dad. A couple of good ones.
Lalo, how about you going out and fetching up the horses?
When the Mexican was gone, Baker Fristo leaned back with his bearded face long and grave and waited for the story. His jaw hardened as he listened. He blinked faster, the full implication reaching him.
Oh, poor woman. No part of it was her fault, but she suffered anyway. Wasn't really your fault either, come right down to it. But you'll be the ones who pay.
He placed the palms of his rough hands together and seemed to measure his thick fingers. He glanced at Speck.
I suppose you went by and told your Aunt Prue?
Oh, we did.
What did she say?
She was awful sorry about it. I reckon I'll go help Lalo.
When Speck was gone, Johnny told his father bitterly about Aunt Prue.
Dad, I never did want to hit a woman in all my life, but I wanted to hit her.
Son, she can't help being what she was born any more than Speck can. What she's done for Speck, she hasn't done out of love. If the truth was known, she likely hates him. But she figures he's her ticket to heaven. She's figured to buy her way in by feeding him and bringing him up, even if she did treat him like a dog from the day he was born, using the book like a whip. Some of what's wrong with Speck today, you can blame on her.
I'm glad I had you and Mother, not somebody like old Aunt Prue.
I've heard of Milam Haggard. I expect most folks have. How long do you think he'll give you?
They'll be burying her today, I guess. Likely he'll come a-riding when the service is over.
How will he know where to start looking?
He can ask the cowboys we worked with. We didn't make any secret about where we came from or who our folks was. Who'd have ever thought we need to?
So he'll likely be stopping here about tomorrow. Next day at the latest.
I expect.
Johnny, I've been doing a lot of thinking lately. I've been hoping you'd get the roaming out of your system and come home to stay. I need you around here.
You got Lalo?
Oh, sure, he's good help, but he's not like family. You're all I got left now. I've been planning how one day soon I turn this place over to you. I've been getting too old and stove up. This place would give you a good start. I started with nothing. It's been a hard fight, but at least I've managed to build this little bit. You could build a lot more. You're young yet.
I've missed you, Dad. I wanted to come home. First, I wanted to prove I could make a hand worth my hire to somebody else. Now, I reckon it's too late.
You could stay and try to talk it out with Haggard.
You don't know how he looked. If he could have, he'd have killed us and cut us up into little bitty pieces. In his place, I suppose I've been the same.
Once a man starts running, it's awful hard to find a stopping place, son. He has to keep on running and running, till finally he can't run anymore. And in the end, he has to turn and face it anyhow.
Dad, I just can't face him now. Call me a coward, and I guess you'd be right. Maybe someday I can, but not now.
It's my fault, in a way. I intended to talk to you, but I was afraid you wouldn't listen. Now it's too late.
Talk about what?
About Speck Whitman. I know you like him. I like him, too, but he's a millstone around your neck.
Dad, you know that's not...
Sure, you made a good pair when you were younger, but you've outgrown him. You're a man now, and ready to take on a man's responsibility. Somewhere back yonder, Speck quit growing. He'll never be a man if he lives to be 100.
Dad...
Let me finish, son. Some folks say he's simple-minded. I don't go that far, but I do say he's got no imagination, no foresight. He's got no idea about the consequences of the things he does. He'd walk into a burning house just to get a cigarette lit. Now, that cow trader was the one to blame for what took place yesterday, but think back. If it hadn't been for Speck, it wouldn't have happened, would it?
No.
You ought to have said adios to him a long time ago, Johnny. Stay with him and he'll get you killed.
You're right, Dad. I've known it a long time. More than once, I've started to ride off and leave him someplace, but I never could bring myself to do it. What could he ever do by himself? Now it's too late. Whatever happens to us now, we'll have to face it together.
Baker Fristo brought himself to look at his son, and his wrinkle-edged eyes were sad. Johnny had never seen his father cry but once when Mrs. Fristo had died. He thought he could see tears in Baker's eyes now.
Then, son, if there's no other way, you better run. You'll need some money. Whatever I've got, I'll give to you. Any idea where you go?
West someplace, wherever the trail leads us. Texas is awful big.
Lalo brought the horses. Badly as he wanted to rest, Johnny knew he and Speck needed to travel all they could. These first days would be crucial. If they could get a long enough lead on Haggard, there was a chance he never could find them in those vast spaces west of here. Baker Fristo took a rope out. He made a gentle underhand loop and caught a long-legged bay.
Speck, here's one that ought to fit you.
When Speck bridled the bay and slipped Baker's rope off its neck, Baker reached out and snared a brown.
Johnny, you know this horse. Old Traveler. I traded him off of Will's Arbuckle. He's not much for pretty, but he'll take you all the way and bring you back.
Thanks, Dad.
They saddled up. Lalo came out from the house with a snack of food, canned goods, cold biscuits, coffee, and a little of the beef. Baker Fristo watched while Speck tied the sack on behind his saddle. He shook hands with Speck.
Good luck, boy.
Oh, thanks.
Baker turned back to Johnny.
Write to me, son. Let me know you're still alive. Maybe someday I'll be able to tell you it's safe to come back.
Dad, we better face what's true. I don't expect I'll ever be able to come back.
Well, Johnny, a man does what he has to. Me? I'll just have to give up some dreams. But as you get older, you find out most of your dreams don't really come true anyway. They keep you going, but they don't often turn out. Still, without them, a man never would amount to much.
Johnny's throat was tight and painful. He wanted to hug his father's neck the way he had done when he was a boy, but he only gripped Baker's rough hand.
Goodbye, Dad.
Baker Fristo watched them ride out of sight. Finally, his shoulders slumped helplessly. He turned toward his house, oblivious of Lalo Acosta standing there, sympathy and puzzlement mixed in the Mexican's dark eyes.
Not goodbye, son. Don't let it be goodbye.
They angled northwestward from the ranch, purposely leaving a clear trail. By and by, they came to a public road. They turned into it and stayed long enough to establish an appearance that they intended to remain on it.
We've gone far enough north. There's generally enough horse and wagon traffic on this road to blot out our tracks before long. Maybe by the time Haggard gets to here, we'll have him fooled. He'll think we've headed to Colorado City and north.
There ain't no use. There ain't nothing gonna fool Milam Haggard for long.
We got to try.
Johnny saw a sandy spot beside the road, and he reined out to the left.
Time we was head west, Speck.
At this point, they were nearly 30 miles up the North Concho from San Angelo. The afternoon was no more than half gone. If they pushed, they should reach the Middle Concho by dark.
Speck, you look sick. You feeling bad?
I've been feeling bad ever since that woman died. I'm tired as all. Tired and scared.
Not alone, Speck. I'm scared too.
They came upon the river at dusk, and it was time, for both of them were spitting cotton. Johnny rode Traveler over the bank and down to the water. He slid stiffly out of the saddle and loosened the cinch so the horse could drink comfortably. He stepped upstream to the end of the reins, holding them because it was too far from home to let a horse get notions about traveling alone. He dropped on his stomach to drink long and gratefully of the cool water. Finally satisfied, he pushed himself up on one knee and wiped his sleeve across his mouth. Above him, Speck was watering too. The horses were both still drinking.
Speck, why don't you come down here and drink? The water looks a little clearer.
It don't matter. I figure on drinking it all anyway.
Johnny looked up the river. The stream here was probably not deep enough to wet a man to his waist, and a good jumper with a running start could almost clear it in a leap.
Ain't you ever gonna get yourself watered out?
I never did know just how good water can taste.
Leave some. We're liable to need it again.
Speck pushed to his feet. It was a considerable effort for him. Johnny could see dark circles under Speck's eyes.
Speck, we just as well camp here. I'm getting hungry.
The Middle Concho lacked the heavy pecan and other timber that the North Concho had. Anyway, if those clouds moved up during the night and brought a spring electrical storm with them, Johnny didn't want to be under a bunch of trees. He'd take his chances with the rain out in the open. He'd seen lightning kill several steers beneath a tree one time. A thing like that came into a man's mind every time he saw a dark cloud. They took the horses back up the riverbank. Johnny looked around for a dry brush that would make good firewood for camp. He saw some mesquite.
If you get that sack off your saddle, Speck, I'll start a fire.
Speck turned toward his horse. His face fell in dismay. He glanced at Johnny, unbelieving.
Johnny, well, that grub ain't here.
What do you mean it ain't here?
I had it tied in my saddle, and now it's gone.
That knot you tied must have come loose. You got any idea where you lost it?
If I'd known when it come off, I'd have stopped and got it.
Might have been a mile. Might have been before we even got out of sight of North Concho. Since we can't go back and hunt for it now.
We got nothing to eat. What are we gonna do?
We'll do without.
They staked the horses on the fresh green grass and spread their blankets. Johnny took a hitch in his belt, but it didn't stop his stomach from growling. He looked at Speck with a nagging impatience. They lay and watched the bull bat swooping down and touching the river, then lifting and banking around for another try.
Johnny, I sure am hungry.
Go down there and get another long drink of water. That'll fill you up.
I already slosh every time I move.
Gradually, as full darkness came, Johnny grew aware of a pinpoint of light upriver. He narrowed his eyes, wondering. Speck noticed it, too.
Campfire?
I expect.
Reckon they got anything to eat?
Sure. They wouldn't be out here without some chuck. But they'd remember us if Milam Haggard came along and asked.
Oh, still, I can almost smell supper a-cooking.
Forget it.
Johnny, I'm a real trial to you.
Go to sleep, Speck.
I'm the one that caused you all this trouble. Hadn't been for me, you'd have something to eat right now. Hadn't been for me, Ms. Haggard would still be alive. We wouldn't have to be running this away. You know what you ought to do, Johnny? You ought to just go off and leave me. You ain't gonna do it, are you, Johnny? You ain't gonna go off and leave me?
No, Speck. I'm not going off and leave you.